We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the show. The Pelicans are on a six-game winning streak. Six games. It's been so exciting. I've almost just gotten over the fact that Anthony Davis only managed to score 53 points tonight on 29 shots. Like, for me, my superstars, they got to score 58 on 29 shots, okay? Like,
make your free throws.
He missed five.
He missed two in a row. He missed a free throw, and then he missed a technical free throw. Like, come on, guy. I want that Jordan double nickel. Like,
if he actually got all five of them, he would have had 58 points, the five that he missed.
Yeah, like, make your free throws, man. Like, come on. Don't chant MVP for a guy who could only put up 53.
53, 18, 5 blocks. I'm 100% convinced that he listened to our podcast where I said that he was checked out and didn't care anymore. I'm taking credit for that. I know that Boogie supposedly called him and said, "What the hell are you doing?" But I'm going to take the credit for it because I'm sure he listens to me.
I think it's all you, and especially like when off air you said you would trade him for Dragan Bender and Maurice Chris.
No, and Alex Len. Don't forget Len.
Yeah, everybody that he fouled out. No, but before we get into it, I'm curious what you would think if somebody were to say, because I'm very sure we're going to hear this take soon in the national media, if not already. The guy's putting up 40, 50 points every night, and they're just beating Milwaukee and Miami by one. They're going to double overtime with Brooklyn. They're barely getting by a terrible Phoenix team. What do you say to that take in general?
They're winning. Who cares? Like, I mean, let's be 100% honest. This team of all the 10 Western Conference playoff contenders has the worst net rating. So if you think that they're going to come in and destroy every single team, then you're stupid. But he's putting up all those points, but the team is built around just a couple big men scoring in the paint, and he's by himself, so he's got to do all of it now. Like, when we talk about the team that went, 3 years ago, I guess it was now, they had Tyreek Evans and Eric Gordon and Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis, and all, like, those three guards were all supposed to be able to put up, on any given night, 20 points. So they had three options to do that with. And They had Ryan Anderson, who was supposed to come in and score like 18 points at the power forward. They had a bunch of scoring options. Take Holiday away. So that's just one other option. What other serious scorer does this team have right now?
Try to agree.
Try to agree. They just had a guy put up 14 points on 5 shots tonight, Ryan. You're forgetting about Emeka Okafor, point god.
Okafor's been so. If you told me Okafor was going to come in and play as well as he did when he was a Hornet, I feel like that's what he's been doing. Then I would have called you an idiot. I really would have. Like this is out of nowhere. It's awesome.
Yeah.
He's 35. He had major back problems.
Yeah, no, that's been a great story. But no, I mean, seriously, to your point, that is how this team is built. This team is built for AD and Drew to go get you 60, and then other guys gotta add in. But he's having to give them even more than that, and he's been doing it just fine. My lone concern is, you know, obviously with the minutes played, I thought Gentry did a great job in a couple of games where if the game would have ended in regulation, AD would have finished with 36 minutes. Like that Miami game, the Pelicans were down, I want to say 7 or 8 late in the third, and it was time to get Davis out according to the rotations Gentry had mopped out. And he did it, even though the Pelicans were down 7 or 8, and he didn't bring them back in until like the 8 or 9 minute mark in the fourth, gave them a nice long rest, and the Pelicans were able to hold on and then obviously come back and almost put away that game in regulation. And if they would have, he would have only gotten 36 minutes that game. So they've been giving him rest, or trying to. Unfortunately, this team finds it way too hard to avoid overtime. So he's been a little above his minutes before that, but I gotta worry when you look at this March stretch and you have nights where they play. I mean, they have 5 games and 6 nights in one stretch. They have 7 and 10. Like, he is not, you don't want him all through March putting up 38, 39, 40 minutes per game. So I'm glad they're getting these wins and he's putting up these numbers, but they're gonna have to find a way to get some wins without him having to carry so much of a load and having to play so many minutes.
All right, so then here's the question for you. Like, Drew Holiday's not going to be able to do it alone. Who's the most likely person who's going to be able to step up and give that scoring punch that Davis doesn't have to go out there and score 40?
I mean, I think the answer is obvious, and he has been bad, you know, as of late, but it's got to be Mirotić. Mirotić is a guy, he's the only other guy on this team that could put up 5 to 10 30-point games in a season. He can go off for 30, can get hot. He's multifaceted scorer, could score in the paint, off the dribble, pull-up jumpers, spot-up jumpers. He's a guy that is much, much better offensively than he's been showing so far in New Orleans. I would say he's honestly, if I had to grade him offensively and defensively since he's come here, I would say his defensive grade is definitely higher and even, you know, might be a full grade higher than his offense. But he is a much more dangerous offensive player than people have seen so far. And the Pelicans have been winning in spite of him these last couple of games. If he could get going and kind of start putting up the numbers he did when he first came back this season, with Chicago, I think that could take a massive load off of AD.
You're not going Walter Lemon?
Not yet. I think maybe by his second 10-day contract.
Okay.
No, but I mean, and there could be a sprinkle of guys. I mean, we saw Ian Clark go off for, you know.
29?
Yeah. You know, Moore has obviously showed it. Miller, when he gets going, could drop 5 or 6 threes in a game. There's a couple of guys, and I just think they need a couple a night. Like you talk about the last playoff season, and yeah, Tyreek really stepped on the gas and led them with AD, but they would get little 20-point nights from Norris Cole. They would get, you know, a 15, 18-point night from Quincy Pondexter. They would get these little contributions here and there, and I think it could be multiple guys, but the biggest guy that needs to turn it around is Mirotic, because he really hasn't been good offensively the last couple of games.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much of that has to do with him just figuring out where he needs to be in the system, getting him settled in. I mean, they had the entire – well, let's be honest. It wasn't the entire break. It's not like they were just sitting in New Orleans waiting for the game to start. Everybody went on vacations, and now they're all coming back. But they did have a little bit more practice around it that they could have used. So I kind of expected to see more sets played for Mirotić, but it feels almost like they're more trying to get him acclimated as the second unit star offensive player. So I don't know how much of like plays they're going to be running with the starters for him. Like there was a couple times tonight where you saw Rondo very clearly, I am getting a shot for Mirotić, where he just purposely ran down the court, tossed the ball to him and set a screen so Mirotić had a wide open shot. So we'll see as that goes on. But yeah, I mean, Mirotić has got to be the one.
And he's definitely a guy who presses. Like he gets his shots up even if they're not there. And I feel like when he's missing, it just exacerbates the problem because now he feels he has to make up for the last one and the one before that. And I wish he would just kind of try to get his offense more in the flow rather than, okay, you know, I haven't really got a look or I haven't been hitting. I'm just going to get this shot up, because there's times when it's just, it's not a good shot and he takes it anyway. And, I feel that he's pressing so that when he starts to get going, I think it'll all kind of work out for him. But right now he's pressing and he's simply taking bad four shots.
Yeah. I was watching these games, and especially like tonight in particular, but there's been a couple other moments where that second unit has stagnated a little bit. Do you miss Jahmyr Nelson at all? Do you think that having that kind of player was going to help here and there, just get the offense going for that second unit, or do you, it doesn't matter?
Not him specifically, no. I wouldn't really want him back. I like what they're able to do with Clark, and yeah, it does hurt the offense, but there is also some positive effect on the defense. I also got to wonder what's going to happen when Solomon Hill comes back, because, you know, I think Rondo could be getting a lot of those second unit rotation minutes, so I'm not really pining for Jahmyr that much.
Okay. And I didn't mean, like, necessarily Nelson himself. Like if they had given up a second-round pick for Elfrid Payton. Oh, wait, no. I watched him tonight, and he was garbage, so never mind.
Yeah, I mean, and people will say that, and I know Payton's been putting up numbers, but Elfrid Payton wouldn't get the opportunities and trust that he's getting in Phoenix. Phoenix has nothing to lose, so they could throw him out there for a bunch of minutes. He could attack. He could, you know, go 100% and just do whatever he wants. If he were traded to New Orleans, he would not get that kind of trust and opportunity and freedom, so he wouldn't be putting up those numbers here.
Yeah. So, I mean, here, I've seen a lot of people saying stuff like, I wish the Pelicans had given up a second for Payton and so on. Here's what I will say about Payton. People say that, hey, if he just had a jump shot, maybe he'd be a much more effective player because then they would have to respect him out at the perimeter. That's not Payton's problem. Payton's problem is that he's not a natural point guard in any way, shape, or form. He has one gear. He either is driving full speed at the basket or he's probing and trying to throw a pass. And that's it. There's nothing else. There's no hesitation to his game. There's no change of pace. There's no ability to go under the basket and try to loop back out on the other side and find another person. There's no natural point guard skills there other than he's a decent ball handler so he can get to the rim. That makes him a shooting guard. So I don't think he's going to be all that useful if you want him to be running any sort of offense for us. That's my take.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind a Pablo Prigioni type. But no to Jameer. But, I mean, to my bigger point, what do you think happened? Let's say Solomon does come back and then he works through restriction and he's back. Do you envision Rondo more with the second unit? Do you think that helps balance out our guard rotation at all? Because Etuan at that point might be playing strictly at the two, or at least far more minutes at guard and far less at forward. How do you think that helps out the rotation, if at all?
So I expect that Diallo's minutes will completely dry up. I know we didn't see him tonight, but all of Diallo's minutes will dry up, and I expect to see a little bit of reduction in Rondo.
Clear, black plus white.
Jesus Christ.
What is with you in your commercials, man?
I don't know, man. Degrees is trying to get up on here. Okay, so Diallo will wash.
I think Diallo minutes will completely dry up. I think that Holiday will get I think Rondo will split more time with the second unit as Moore absorbs more time with the starting unit with Hill there. But you know, do you expect Hill to be playing more than like 20 to 24 minutes a game?
No, but I mean, even that would take away a lot. Like Rondo got 36 minutes tonight. I know that they, you know, I know that they really like Drew off the ball, but I struggle with Rondo because, I mean, maybe I shouldn't because he is what he is, but there's just so many stretches during the game where I'm like, oh, okay, good, he got us in the offense, he's talking, he's telling people where to go, and then he'll always make passes that are just, the reward is so small and the risk is so high. Like, did you see the alley-oop he threw to Emeka tonight? Like, did you really expect Emeka to jump up 8 feet higher than he ever has, grab it with one hand and slam it? Like, that is a no-win pass. There's nothing good that could have come out with that. But he'll throw that. He threw that.
Emeka threw down an alley-oop tonight. He had one.
Yeah. Watch the one that Rondo threw it like he threw it to AD or Jordan or DeAndre Jordan in his prime. And then there was like the inbounds pass that he tried to throw across court from the baseline that easily got stolen. Rondo's just very frustrating to me because, you know, a lot of the highs are as good as almost anybody else's. Some of his bank shots, both in the paint and then the 3-point one against Milwaukee are fantastic and memorable, but then he'll also have some absolutely frustrating plays where he tries to thread the needle to a guy who, even if he caught it, wouldn't do anything with it. So I think some of the minutes got to come from him as well, and I hope that could kind of push him into more second unit minutes to kind of, because I do think he has a good chemistry with Mirotic and he tries to get him the ball. So I would like to see those two playing together with maybe Miller and, you know, Moore and somebody else. So, yeah, I think you take all the minutes from, like, looking at tonight, Liggins got 7, Lemon got 5.
You take those 12.
Yeah, you take those 12, you take 12 from Rondo, maybe 10 from Rondo and 5 from Clark, something like that. But I think that's pretty much how the minutes will shake up. I like where everybody else is at.
Yeah. So we need to talk a second about Okafor because I already, you know, talked about how crazy it is that he's doing this. Am I crazy in thinking that he's almost perfect for the role that we, like, needed?
For what was realistic to get, like, I think almost perfect is, yeah, that's a little crazy, but I think you could start to have a conversation about if you had the chance right now to do it over again and both Okafor and Monroe wanted to come to your team, who you would pick? I do think that is a legitimate question, and I do think it's pretty reasonable to believe that you could make a really good argument for Okafor.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way I look at it. Like, Okafor is going to go in there, and he's, for, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, he is going to bang with the big guy on the other side and get rebounds and fight and scrabble and let Davis not have to do all the work inside and just try to keep him fresh a little bit. It's what we always talked about Ashiq being, and he's gone, and I'm already saying his name wrong. I don't know. It's just – it's what we needed more than a – you know, lumbering center who can score on post-ups a little bit and thread some passes from the elbow. I think it's a better thing for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, I mean, I saw points in both the Miami and the Milwaukee game where guys started to drive into the paint, saw Okafor there, and backed it out. Like, that legitimately happened, and it's nice to have another presence like that in there. And I'll even throw Mirotić. You know, Mirotić has been a shot blocker for the Pelicans over these last couple of games. So they've got a presence in there. And that's just what we see on the court from Emeka. We're not even talking about, you know, what we don't know is going on behind the scenes and him working with Diallo and his conversations with Davis. Like, those are the intangible things we really don't know have an effect. But I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Emeka has inspired Anthony Davis a bit. I mean, even AD admitted that he was kind of sulking after the Emeka injury and was frustrated. You know, then you have a guy has every reason to have retired and moved on with his life. Like, Emeka Okafor has made a lot of money, and beyond that, he is a really intelligent guy. He does not need to be grinding away in the G League just for the hopes of maybe earning a minimum contract. But he did, and if you're a guy like AD, how can you sit there and whine when you're making $26 million in the prime of your life, you know, as an MVP candidate in the face of a franchise when there's another guy who's literally, you know, breaking himself and killing himself just a small chance to play in the NBA for a minimum contract? Like, that even goes beyond what he's giving on the court. So I think the Emeka pickup was inspired. I think it's another tip of the hat that we owe Dell, and a really nice job by him. And then the coaching staff to trust Okafor, and you know, it's been paying off.
Yeah. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I always thought I always made fun of Okafor a little bit because he's a little bit robotic and he's not, you know, a real powerhouse player. But I also always really liked him, if that makes sense. So it's nice to see him out there doing this kind of stuff. We haven't talked about...
What would you do? I mean, I know we've had a little bit of a sample size and it's stupid to just do such a small sample size, but literally today, if you had the choice, they both wanted to come to you for the minimum contract, who would you take for the rest of the season, Okafor or Greg Monroe?
Okafor.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, here's the reality about Monroe is, like, he's been basically played out of the league over, like, the past couple seasons. Like, his numbers decline every single year, and teams realize what kind of horrendous defensive player he is and go right at him. He is Al Jefferson from 10 years ago, except now it's modern day NBA where they hunt you even more mercilessly if you're that guy. So Al Jefferson was a major liability defensively for years, and even though he could score very efficiently around the rim. So it's now the same thing happening with Monroe, except the NBA is more vicious to that kind of player now. Jahlil Okafor, did you really think he was going to be this useless of a basketball player?
So there were two top prospects in our entire history of NBA draft preparation that I bashed mercilessly. And by top prospects, I mean guys who the consensus was they were going top five or top eight, and I said I wouldn't even take them in the lottery. One was Anthony Bennett, and the second was Jahlil Okafor. So I didn't think he'd be this bad, but to me it was so obvious with the way the league was going and how easy it is to defend post players that if that's literally the guy's only strength, that would be, I mean, that would be like if your only strength as a fluffer was...
God. Really? You're going there?
Conversation. Like, there's no... there's nothing you could do for me. So, yeah, I never understood how it was even fathomable to make that guy a top five pick.
Right. Okay. Let me ask you this question.
For those of you who don't know what a fluffer is, not just bad.
So you always like to do this when we're talking off season. You say, you know, just throw out entire past. When you're evaluating players that you're going to sign, whether they're yours or somebody else's or whatever, just throw out their past and say, would I pay that guy this contract if they, you know, if I was just going out into the free agency market and picking that guy up? And I want your opinion. Would you consider the contract that Drew Holiday got this offseason if he was a free agent and available at the end of the season? Would you offer something similar to that, or would you still offer less?
I mean, so to me, there's two different questions. One, would I be fine with that? Would I offer that? Is he worth it? Yeah, I do think he. I think the way that he's been playing lately, I can't think of more than maybe. Trying not to exaggerate too much here, but there's not more than six guards that I would definitely want over him. Like, I'd even look at somebody like DeMar DeRozan. I could debate it either way. I'm not going to waste my time right now, but I could debate it either way. Kyrie Irving, I could honestly debate that either way. And Kyrie was a guy that early in the season people were talking about as an MVP candidate. So the way he's playing now, yes, he's definitely worth the contract. The issue I still have is, if we're being honest, what was the second best offer to Drew Holiday? Because, you know, if somebody's selling me something that has to be sold today, and they're definitely selling it, I don't have to match their price. I have to beat the second best offer. And I'm just hard pressed to believe that if I were to see what the other offers were for Drew, that the second best offer was anything close to what the Pelicans gave him. So does that matter? Probably not, because he's worth what we paid right now. That's still my issue with that contract and Dell's negotiation skills when it comes to big contracts in general, is there's no way you could tell me the second best offer for Omer was anything near what we paid. Same for Drew, et cetera. So that's still the one problem I have with it, but I'm not going to get too hung up over it.
Right. And I wasn't trying to relitigate this offseason and make it seem like it was a great thing that we signed him to this massive contract. But I was just trying to think, like, based on what we're seeing, like, I feel comfortable with what he's being paid. I know there's a lot of people out there who will say stuff like, well, he's the 14th highest paid player in the league. And it's true. Like, he's not the 14th best player. No one would say that.
He has been playing like it the last couple games.
Yeah, if you take the two games.
It's a small sample. I don't know. I mean, he's been – okay, go ahead. But, I mean – this is from somebody who was bashing Drew early in the season. He has been a stud as of late. Like, yeah. Not good, but, like, elite.
Yeah. But the way I look at it when I'm evaluating whether a guy's worth his contract is I always go back to the fact that every team in the league has a max or near max two of them available to them. So I know everybody's like, oh, if he's a max player, he needs to be a star who's taking you somewhere. But the reality is the 40th and 50th best guy in the league are going to get close to max. It's just the reality. So Drew Holiday getting close to the max, he's definitely worth it. So
yeah, what he did in that Milwaukee game was I hadn't seen that. Like I don't see many scoring guards like that, at least not doing it the way that he did. And it seems like when he makes up his mind to go to the basket now, like he makes it look so easy and finishing with both hands. And it's crazy that this is the same guy that was driving me nuts. I mean, he used to go to the rim and put up layups that didn't even hit the rim.
Yeah.
He would settle so much for these ugly mid-range shots and never make them. It's remarkable that it's the same person. And I don't think we have to, and I'm not just saying this because I was one of them, I don't think we have to shame people who were really upset with that contract, especially how he came out playing early, because it's not like he was playing well and just missing. This is, if you watch the game tape side by side, you pick any game from the first couple of weeks and then any game now, it's not just a results thing. It's a process. He is playing as if he is a totally different human being. So I'm happy about it, but I don't find the need to go and shame people who were bashing Drew's play early, because I think it's been a massive change in his game and confidence and just explosiveness, and it seems like he's not overthinking anymore. He's just constantly attacking, which is what the staff has always wanted him to do.
Yeah, and if you take a moment and think back to like the low points of Drew Holiday this year, you're going to think about him turning the ball over on the last possessions of games over and over again. Like just easily getting stripped or having the ball tipped out of his hands and he loses it out of bounds. Like these are the things that Drew was doing regularly at the beginning of the season. And if you just focus on those possessions, though, he was losing that because he couldn't get himself, he couldn't decide how he was going to attack. He was always like, am I going to go left around this pick? Am I going to go right around this pick? Am I going to try to, you know, fake the guy out? And he was always thinking this through, allowing the defender to get into whatever position they wanted and stopping him from being able to attack the way he needed to. And now he just gets the ball and goes. There's nothing. There's no thought. There's just, I know I can do these things, and I'm going to go do them. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I have been impressed by many Anthony Davis games this year. I would say there wasn't a single stretch from anybody this year, even games where Boogie was on fire, there wasn't a single stretch where I was more impressed by a player this year than Drew in that third quarter of the Milwaukee game and then the first couple minutes when he returned from getting rest in the fourth. I couldn't say how many shots he put up where I was like, no, don't take that. And then it went in and, you know, and then he would attack and then he was still playing stellar defense on the other end, switching on everything, getting through off ball screens. Like, he's just been absolutely fantastic. So glad to see that. One other point I wanted to point out real quickly about Okafor, and this also ties into Liggins. We haven't heard yet, or at least I didn't catch it yet, whether or not Dell got a second-year option on Okafor the way that he did on Liggins. Just one small thing, nerd thing I want to point out for everybody is even with the second-year option, I don't really expect Dell to invoke those options even if he does want to bring Okafor or Liggins back, mainly because when you sign a veteran player to the minimum, you have to pay them the entire minimum. So let's say for Tony Allen it was $2.1 million, but only only a part of that counts against the luxury tax and hard cap and all of those things. And the Pelicans are going to be in such a difficult position and right on or above the tax that if they want to bring Okafor and Liggins back, the smarter thing and the thing that they'll probably do is just decline those options and then go out and sign them to the veteran minimum. And that will be able to save them, you know, over $1 million in luxury tax or maybe even keep them under the tax. So anyway, it's a real boring thing, but I know people are looking to find out if we got the second year option on Okafor and think it's a good thing that we got it on Liggins. In either case, I would be surprised if we used it. So long story short, I really don't care if Dell gets that from Okafor in this contract or not.
Yeah. And to be honest, like even if Okafor continues to play at this rate, it's not going to be that difficult to re-sign him next year in any way. Like there's all kinds of players on the center market. He will be available for a pretty cheap deal. So if it comes down to it, they're going to be able to bring him back if they really, really want to. If they feel like they need some coverage for Cousins for the first month or two, which I fully expect they're probably going to need to, then he'll be there waiting, I'm sure.
Yeah, and sometimes it's okay to just take what you get from a guy and then let it go. Like, yeah. We wanted Norris Cole back after that year, and Norris Cole sucked. And I mean, sometimes a guy just gives you a magical little run for 20 or 30 games, and you say thank you and you tip your hat, but then you realize that it's probably not going to happen for the next 82, or that you've got a guy like Diallo who you want to give a chance through training camp and give him one last shot to really be a rotation guy. Like, it's not the worst thing in the world to just get 20 or 30 good games from a guy and then move on, because Okafor is a nice little story, but if we're being objective, the likelihood that he's going to be a quality rotation player next year is probably pretty small. Now, if you want to bring him back as a fifth big and the Kendrick Perkins type of leader on your team and hard worker in practice, whatever, I'm totally fine with that. But I would bet no matter how well Okafor finishes out this season, expecting him to be a quality contributor next year too. Like, that's just, that's an unlikely bet.
All right. Okay. You got anything else to talk about individual players, or can I move on to my next subject?
I mean, the only other guy, and I want to get your opinion, is Rondo. Because Rondo, we've seen stretches where they just stopped playing him or played him limited minutes, and then all of a sudden he's in during crunch time all the time. What is your overall take on Rondo?
So up until the Milwaukee game, I would have said it was purely matchup driven, that if he was going up against big guards who were taking him to the rack, then they weren't going to play him very much. But Milwaukee had guards who were taking him to the hole and scoring on him, and they still kept him in there, and he was being more effective than you'd expect. I don't know what happened in the Milwaukee game. In general, I fully expect that if he is going up against physical specimens, he's generally not going to play a whole lot of minutes in those games. Those would be the ones where he gets 15, 16 minutes, and the games where he can play against smaller guys, he'll get closer to 28 or 30. Do you think that is incorrect?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matchup thing anymore. I do think that he was not a great pair with Boogie on the court a lot. I know they like each other, but I don't think they were fit. So I think with him leaving, they kind of need Rondo's playmaking a little more. And I really think that Rondo gets the minutes he does because of what it does for Drew. I still think that they could tell Drew to be an attacking guard when Rondo is off the floor, but then he looks around and Etuan Moore's just standing there spotted up, 80s kind of roaming, you know, and there's not really other people that he's feeling like could go and make a play, and it just makes him a little bit more of a lead guard as opposed to an off. And I think with Boogie going down and no other real playmakers on this team, I think Rondo's going to continue to get minutes regardless of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I did wonder. That was like the one thing I was thinking when Boogie went down is he generates a lot of plays. Like he was, the ball was in his hands. He was the one making a decision a lot. And Mirotić, I don't feel like while he's a savvy passer at times, he's not a playmaker. And I just trying to figure out where that would be coming from. And you're right. Rondo's the obvious choice, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Solomon Hill could create a little bit. I'm really interested to see one, what Hill is going to be when he comes back, and two, what skills carry over through the injury. But, I think Rondo's got to kind of play. I would say, honestly, the guy that I feel, actually, I'll ask you. So let's say not Rondo, not Drew, put the ball in a perimeter guy's hands to drive to the bucket and then kick it to the open guy. Who do you feel most comfortable with in that situation? Kick it or find an open guy or?
Clark.
Really?
Yeah.
Second Clark puts the ball on the ground, I'm terrified. Like, I like him as a spot-up guy. The second he starts dribbling towards the rim, I get terrified.
I think he's not bad at finding a pocket pass to a rolling big, but finding a guy in the perimeter, I think you're right. That's not Clark. He doesn't fire to the wing. I honestly don't know. I can't really think of him. Who you got?
The guy who, when he drives, I feel the most comfortable with by far is Darius Miller. I think he'll find somebody in the paint who's cutting for a dunk. I think he'll find somebody on the print. Like, he's the one that when they run out on our shooters and he puts it on the ground, I am the least skittish about. So I'm curious what we'll see with Hill.
Yeah. And, you know, when he was in college, he worked as a backup point guard for that Kentucky team. So, yeah. Okay. Here's what I want you to do.
All right.
Handicap the Western Conference playoff teams for us.
Good God.
San Antonio has 25 losses. Timberwolves, Pelicans, Blazers have 26. OKC, Denver, and Clippers have 27. Utah Jazz, because they had to play Houston tonight and everybody loses to Houston, now have 30 losses.
Mm.
So, if you had to put odds on any of these teams to not make it, what are the two teams you would put the highest odds on? You don't have to give me the exact numbers, like 30% or 5-2 or whatever you want. But which two teams do you think are the least likely to make the playoffs at this point? Because I know you were picking Portland for a while, but Portland's been playing pretty well recently. They're up to 34-26. They got the same record, Pelicans.
Yeah, my cop-out answer would be whoever suffers the injuries over the next couple weeks, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to imagine everybody stays as healthy as they are right now. I'd say the Jazz. I think the All-Star break came at the worst possible time for them. I think they were playing amazing basketball, hitting everything, and all of a sudden, and now they've kind of reverted to their mean. On the offensive end, they're still playing really good defensively, but I just think that they're one injury away, be it Gobert, be it Donovan Mitchell from, maybe even be it Rubio for how their team functions from really going into another skid. And I just think they've got too much to overcome. So I'd say the Jazz. I would say the other one, gosh, I would say Denver, just because they're such a good home team and such a bad road team, and they have four more road games than home games. Like, they only have 9 more home games to go. So let's say they go 7-2 in those, that gets them to 40. I don't know if they could win 4 or 5 more road games, and I think it takes 44, maybe 45 wins to get into the playoffs. So I would actually say Denver would be a team, just because of how bad they are on the road, that would worry me.
Yeah, they are 9-19 on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have 13 road games left. So,
yep.
I mean, they could easily lose 9 of those. And right there, you're at 36 losses. You have to almost be perfect at home. So, they would be the other one for me.
Okay. So you think the Clippers are going to make it?
I don't think, well, I think they're slightly more likely to make it than the Denver and Utah, but I wouldn't even put $5 on this playoff race at any spot. It's going to go based off of luck, injury luck, and then other circumstances, not even your own injury luck, but like a lot of these teams, like the Pelicans don't get to play Minnesota anymore, but some of the, they got Minnesota 4 times when Jimmy Butler was healthy 4 times. But now, some of these teams, like Portland gets Minnesota here coming down the stretch. I think the Clippers get them twice. Utah gets them twice. Denver gets them twice. So, like, it's not only your own injury luck, but do you get to play the team when they're at their worst? Like, we get San Antonio 3 times. Are we getting all 3 without Kawhi? So I think that there's a lot of other elements that are going to play a major factor. And I would say they're less likely to make it, but I wouldn't bet on anything in this Western Conference playoff picture. I wouldn't even bet on San Antonio making it, to be honest.
All right. Yeah, I wouldn't either. What do you think is the bottom wins number to get in then? Is it 44, 45?
I think it is, and then it depends on tiebreakers. I think everybody between 3 and 10, it's going to be 40, 44 wins is going to be the 8 seed, and then it's only going to be 48, 49 for the 3 or 4 seed. So it's going to be a clustered little bunch, and a lot of it's going to come down to tiebreakers.
Okay.
What about you? What 2 teams do you have the least confidence in making the playoffs?
OKC and the Jazz.
Okay.
And I know I'm betting against Westbrook, but there's just something. I watch OKC and they don't seem to flow. They don't seem to defend particularly well. It's me doing eye test stuff, and it's kind of stupid to go that route. Because I don't spend enough time digging into their analytics like I used to, like 5 years ago. They don't feel like they're a particularly mentally healthy team, and I think they're going to hit like a spot that's going to make them fall apart a little bit, and they're going to slip out.
Yeah, I would still believe in that. I really think the best thing for them is if somebody, Tanya Hardinged, Carmelo. Like, I really think if that team never makes the Carmelo trade, they're a 50 plus win team easy. I really think that guy is sandbagging that team, in so many ways. So,
here's the thing so when I used to watch Carmelo, there was one time and one time only where I was worried about him. And it was when he was getting the ball in the mid post and he was just catching and attacking, and he would drive against anybody, score over them, or if the ball didn't go in, he would out rebound all kinds of people to re-grab that ball and put it right back in again. And when he was playing that power game, he was deadly. There was just nothing anybody could do to stop him in the league. And he never does that anymore. That's just you might see that like two possessions out of a game from him now. And if he's not doing that, he's just a mid-range shooter who sometimes can get hot. That's it.
Yeah, but I still believe in PG. I believe in, like, Westbrook never takes a day off, Steven Adams. So I still believe in that team.
If they play Golden State again, though, Zaza might just take him out for us. So.
Oh, that guy. The
God.
The most random X-Factor, like, I know people will, like, if San Antonio loses Aldridge, I think this is the main thing, is you could go through and see how little room for error every team has where they're an injury away from, you know, plummeting from third to 10th or fourth to ninth. You know, most of the teams, it's obvious. With San Antonio, if Aldridge goes down, Pop is a magician. The franchise is amazing. I just can't possibly see them winning games consistently against good teams. So they're an Aldridge injury away. Obviously for the Pelicans, Davis or Drew. I just think it would be too much to overcome if one of them went down. You know, Minnesota went through it with Butler. They've had some easy teams. Their next eight games are kind of brutal. I'm interested to see how they look. The most random one for me is in Denver. If Will Barton goes down, like, people will probably just say, oh, that's Will Barton. I would say that maybe even more than Jokic, if Will Barton goes down, that team is going to start reeling. So, again, we could talk about how everything's going to...
I would have said Murray.
No, I mean, Murray is replaceable. What he gives you is replaceable from other guys, and they would just come in and be able to... I'm telling you, Will Barton is the guy that they trust in the fourth quarter, and that provides a whole different type of energy for that team. So, you know, we could sit here and try to figure it out. There's going to be more injuries between now and the end of the year. There'll be crazy things with luck and certain teams tanking at certain times and then other tanking teams deciding to play that night, and there'll be all these weird factors we can't judge, but I really think it's going to come down to, at the end, you know, who gets the one or two injuries that just knocks them out. But it's a fun little race, and the Pelicans really do have a realistic shot at anywhere from 3 to 10.
Yeah. So then let's ask the next question. With the idea that you want to win a playoff round, which of those teams are you picking as your team? If you were doing a 4-5 or if they managed to get to 3 somehow, who would you want in the 6th spot?
The only team that's in playoff contention right now that I'd really feel comfortable with the Pelicans against, that I would make them a slight favorite, is Portland. I would make the Pelicans the underdog in literally every other series. And I'm not considering the Clippers, because if the Clippers get in, they're going to be 8 and we're not getting the 1 seed. So I'm talking about Minnesota, San Antonio, OKC, Portland, and Denver. So like the only one that I would make the Pelicans a favorite against there would be Portland.
Okay.
What about you? Who do you like as a matchup? Or are there multiple teams?
So I want to make them the favorite over the Nuggets. But I'm probably just being stupid there. And the reason why I want to make them the favorite over the Nuggets is just because I resent any young and upcoming team. They all suck, every young and upcoming team. So, Denver, I resent you. So, therefore, you must be worse than the Pelicans. How's that sound?
Yeah, I don't see how they win a game at Denver. So, that means even if we get home court, you got to go 4-0 at home, and I never trust the Pelicans to do that. So, but Portland, I like that matchup. you know, I don't know what version of Jimmy Butler is back by the playoffs. And Solomon Hill, like, there are certain matchups where Solomon Hill wouldn't really be an X factor. I definitely think a healthy Solomon Hill changes kind of how we've seen the dynamics of a series between the Pelicans and the Timberwolves this season. So, wouldn't be the worst, you know, the Spurs without Kawhi, they would still have a massive advantage when it comes to experience, when it comes to coaching. But, you know, sometimes we act like the Spurs are always going to win because they're the Spurs, but they get knocked out almost every year at some point in the playoffs. Like, they're not invincible. You know, this roster, I mean, if you took the Spurs roster right now and put it basically on any other franchise with any other coach, like, what would people expect from them? 35 wins?
Yeah. It feels like a Rick Carlisle kind of thing to me, too. Like, Carlisle for many years kept teams in playoff contention that really should have had no business being there. San Antonio is doing the same thing with this roster. This roster is no different than the Dallas Mavericks roster from 2 years ago that somehow made it into the playoffs. It's bizarre, except that somehow they have 36 wins and 25 losses. They're 11 games over. Like, how does that happen?
So I posted this question on Twitter today. I'd just be curious to get your full response. But I basically asked people, look, if I could, through some wizardry, just guarantee you the 7 seed today, you get that. You don't have to stress over these next 22 games or whatever it is. You're going to get the 7 seed. Or you could roll the dice, play out these 22 games, however they're going to play out, and it goes how it goes. What would you take? The overwhelming majority of people, I would guess, a big part of which is since we were in a winning streak, said that they would roll the dice. What say you?
I would roll the dice. Like, I understand there's like moral victories to be had that you can say, well, I took a game or maybe even 2 games from Golden State and or OKC, but there's a real difference between going out on the market and looking for those bargain bin guys and saying, hey, we were the 5th seed in the Western Conference or the 6th seed in the Western Conference, and we're getting DeMarcus Cousins back this year, and you're going to come join us, and we're going to make some noise, to saying, well, we squeezed into the playoffs. We had one more, you know, we were 7 seed. And we got swept by the Golden State Warriors, or we managed to take a game from them. I would rather be pitching the first thing than the second.
Okay, but those are the only 2 scenarios you left. What you conveniently left out is the scenario in which the Pelicans miss the playoffs, which I know we're in a winning streak now, and it's all positive. There's no way they could miss the playoffs. There's definitely a way. I would say, and this is my, I'd be curious what you say. I'd say the chances of them missing the playoffs are higher and perhaps much higher right now today than the chances of them making the second round of the playoffs, regardless of what spot they're in. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would give them a, so if I was handicapping, I would say there's probably a 25% chance they miss entirely, a 50% chance that they make the playoffs, more like 70% chance they make a playoffs, and the 5% chance that they win in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, to me, like, I think the most likely outcome is that they're a one and done anyway. I would rather take that. To me, anything above making the playoffs this season is gravy. And that doesn't even take into account that, yeah, okay, 7th or 8th seed, you probably lose to Houston but you definitely lose to Houston and Golden State. And at best, it's 5 games or whatever. But I still think if you could go and give Golden State or Houston a tough five games, then you could go in the offseason going, man, we lost three of those games by a total of 7 points. If we have Boogie, we win at least two of those games. We could have won that. Like, you could find ways to lie to yourself. If you go in the first round and get your butt kicked by a depleted San Antonio or Minnesota with Jimmy Butler on one leg, like, you can't even lie to yourself in the off season. And I think there's so much value, so much more value in getting your butt kicked by the champs or a championship caliber team, than if you go in and you lose to Minnesota, who then gets their butt kicked by the champs. I know I'm not usually super risky and it stays here. I would just take the 7 seed because I don't see the major upside, most likely, in getting any other seed. So I want this team to make the playoffs. I think that'll be such a nice stepping stone for them going into next season. I'm not trying to get greedy here.
Yeah, we have to do is get the fourth or fifth seed so that we face Chris Paul and the Houston Rockets in the second round and we're guaranteed a win.
Oh, those floppers. yeah, either way, I'm glad to see him playing like this, but I don't want people to think that this winning streak is going to, they're going to hit a rough patch. And that brings us to one other thing I wanted to talk about. The NBA had to reschedule the Indiana game. Pelicans, fault in a lot of ways, obviously. The roof was broke. They couldn't play the original game. Indiana had to fly out and then fly back, which I'm sure sucked for them. But when the NBA did reschedule this game, they rescheduled it as a middle game of a back-to-back-to-back, which we haven't had since the strike-shortened seasons. And in addition to that, like I said earlier, the Pelicans, they have like a day off before and after. They have one stretch. In that stretch, they're playing 5 games in 6 nights. And then, like I said, 7 and 10. It's just crazy. Do you think that the NBA doing that is crazy as I think? Do you think they had no other choice? Do you think it's justified? What did you think when you saw that that game got scheduled for March 21st?
So my knee-jerk reaction was that's ridiculous and crazy and stupid, especially considering how much of a big deal they're making of how they're fixing the schedule these years. Like recently, they one of the best, funniest articles I read all summer was that they just last year brought in a machine to actually calculate all of the schedules, that before that, up until that time, somebody was doing it by hand, which... Which just blows my mind. Like 82 games per team, and you got to figure out the schedule with all of the, knowing things like circus trips and stuff like that. That's crazy. Like, you need a computer to do that. But from what I understand, apparently they gave the Pelicans a few options, and this is the one they chose. So can you imagine how awful the other options must have been? Like, just... I don't know. Maybe they just looked at the options they had, and they're like, "Well, this is the one where we'll just completely just write off a couple of these games in here." Maybe they looked at it and said, "Well, putting Indiana between Dallas and Los Angeles, we should be able to win at least those surrounding games, so it's okay." I don't know. It's awful.
Yeah,
like, March was already where the schedule started turning a little harsh on us. And where the team was, slated to have like a break even month at best, and throwing this in the middle of the easiest part of that schedule just made it really brutal. Like, it's hard. It's gonna be a really tough month.
Yeah. There's gonna have to be games there where they just decide to rest and throw it in. They have 2 Houston games. If Houston's still playing like this, go ahead and have rest days on those games. I understand that they couldn't come back early from the break without basically getting approval from the players' union, because that's in the CBA. I know that games don't get rescheduled for after the season's over, so that wasn't realistic. So I know they were kind of in a tough spot here, but it's to the point where I'm glad the Pelicans are reeling off these wins right now, because they're going to have to build a cushion. Because as you're saying, the games in and of themselves don't look tough. Like home against Dallas, I'd make the Pelicans favored. Home against Indiana, same. Home against LA, same. But three of those games in three nights after, you know, and having those games be, you know, the fifth and sixth nights and stuff like that, like, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot tougher. So I think they're going to have to be very strategic, but where they could help themselves is by building themselves a cushion right now, because that schedule is going to hit, and it's going to hit hard. And it's a shame, because it's when they should be getting a break, because it's when their home stretch is. But, you know, it's not Indiana's fault that there was a leak in the Smoothie King Center, and, you know, that doesn't happen most of the time, and now they've got to make up for it. So I'm a little frustrated, but with these wins, hopefully the Pelicans could build a cushion and then could take us up a couple of those games off.
Yep. So before the next pod coming up, we only have two more games, and that's at San Antonio and at Dallas, Wednesday, Sunday. So they actually have a little bit of rest. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they get to hang out and not have to do too much. So San Antonio, we've been talking about how weird they are. Do you really think – so when LaMarcus Aldridge was in Portland, did you think of him as a guy who could carry a franchise to a potential 48-50 wins just by himself?
No, and he probably couldn't if that franchise was anyone other than San Antonio.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, Rudy Gay scores a little bit for this team. Patty Mills scores a little bit for this team, but there's nobody else on this roster. Like, we just talked about how, you know, we need to have a second guy who can actually come in and score a little bit, or really a third guy. Like Pau Gasol's averaging 10 points, Gay's 11 points, LaMarcus is 22, and everybody else is in single digits. How are they winning games?
Because they're not going to turn the ball over, and they're going to defend the shit out of you. So they're basically going to say, look, we're going to play a B-plus game, and if you bring your A game, you will beat us. But we're going to bet that more times than not, other NBA teams don't bring their A game. And that's basically how it goes for them. Like, when they win games, it's not because they're fantastic or play, you know, exceptionally well. It's because basically they didn't beat themselves, and they're counting on the other team beating themselves. I mean, they're just a tennis player sitting on the baseline waiting for you to commit a mistake, and then they know they're not gonna. So, yeah, if you hit some great shots, you're gonna beat them, but they just don't turn the ball over, and they don't beat themselves.
So you want to hear some fun trivia about the Spurs? Are you looking at their stats at all right now, or no?
No.
Okay. How many guys on this team do you think are averaging 28 minutes or more?
I'm going to go with 7.
1.
Jeez.
LaMarcus Aldridge gets 34 minutes a game, and the next closest is Kyle Anderson at 27.5 and Danny Green at 26.2.
Okay. So they're coming at you in waves.
They're coming at you in waves. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, including Kawhi. They've got 10 guys who are averaging 20 minutes plus. So that's crazy. It's like old Memphis under Hubie Brown, where they would descend. They had two sets of guys who each got 24 minutes, except for Pau Gasol. this is the one I thought was weirdest, and we're taking Kawhi Leonard out of this because he only played 9 games. Who do you think on this team leads the Spurs in steals? I was floored.
I mean, I would just say, just because of the minutes you told me, I would say Kyle Anderson.
It's Kyle Anderson with 1.4 steals per game.
Okay.
That's I think that's better than Drew right now.
He's a crafty little smart guy. I could see
that. He is a very smart. He is the perfect Spurs player. He's a very smart guy. All right, last one for you. Who do you think is the best three-point shooter on this team, percentage-wise?
So I would say volume-wise, it's definitely – well, not definitely, but I would guess Patty Mills. I'm going to go with, like, somebody random like Forbes or Bertrands.
It's Pau Gasol.
How many does he take?
He takes 1.7 a game. So okay. It's not a lot. But, yeah, Patty Mills takes 4.8. He is volume. And then Danny Green takes 4.6. And Forbes is it's taken 3 a game and hit 37.8. So that was a good guess. But Pau Gasol at 39.8% from 3.
Yeah.
It's such a strange team.
They're a weird team, but they'll play good defense. You'll have to take tough shots, and if you hit them, you'll beat them. You know, on the other end, they're not going to take high-risk chances, so they're not going to get great shots, but they'll get good enough. Like, they're just going to play their B-plus game, and if you're going to play your A game, they'll tip their hat and move on, but you've got to beat them. They are not going to beat themselves. They're not going to do what Milwaukee did the other day and down the stretch just completely change their game plan and start taking a bunch of mid-range shots rather than attacking the basket. Like, they're going to do what they do, and if you play your A game, you'll get to walk out with the victory, but they're just going to bet you're not going to do that. So
yeah.
I admire it. Like, to me, it's insane. You put the same exact roster or similar type player on another roster with another coach and another franchise, like, this is a 34-35 win team. So props to them.
Okay. The other team that we're playing this week is the Dallas Mavericks, everybody's favorite team, especially Jason's. So they're the wheels have come off a little bit for them. They played it tough earlier in the season, but over, like, the last 20 games, they've only won 3 times. I guess it's 4 times after the win against Indiana. So 4 times out of 20 games, is this Mark Cuban's nefarious tank proposition coming into play, or are they really – is that talent really only able to win 4 games out of every 20?
I think they've got the talent, obviously, to win – more than that. They have, I wouldn't say their roster is much worse right now than San Antonio. Like, okay, so Aldridge is a little better than Harrison Barnes, but, like, you're looking at the same kind of players. Like, Dirk is your Manu Ginobili, just an old guy, but still somewhat productive. JJ Barea is your Patty Mills. Like, they have a similar type of roster theoretically to San Antonio. So I still think they've got the talent and they're a dangerous team. But I don't think all emphasis is on winning, because if it was, you wouldn't be playing Dennis Smith a ton of minutes, because as explosive and as exciting that guy is, he is, he's instant offense for the other team. So plus they're trying to give guys like Collinsworth and, trying to find some of these scrap heap guys and seeing if they've got a future, seeing what they have in Doug McDermott, et cetera, rather than just trying to win every night.
Right. So let me ask you the most important thing about these two games, and it's not winning. I don't care who's going to win these two games really at all. Which of these two teams is more likely to stop Anthony Davis from being able to get his easy 35 points a game?
I would say San Antonio, just because I still think AD has slightly more problems with a guy like Barnes than he does with a traditional guy like Aldridge.
You think Dallas then is more likely to break it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a harder matchup for him.
Okay.
Unless they
I was going to say the same thing and try to stir things up, but you beat me to it, so you suck.
Yeah, unless they put Nowitzki on him and then he just goes for 85, which would be awesome.
Right. Okay, so make your I lied about not caring what the record's going to be. Make your prediction. What is the Pelicans going to do in these two games? San Antonio Wednesday, Dallas Sunday. What is their record for the remaining part of the week?
I think they go 1-1. I would love a win at San Antonio, but I just feel the accumulation of all these minutes have caught up to them, and you know, you could kind of have these lull stretches in parts of the game against teams like Phoenix and even into some extent Milwaukee. I think if I had to bet how the game plays out, I bet they actually come out strong against San Antonio because they do get fired up for good teams, but then they'll have a stretch in the second or most likely third quarter, and then it'll just come down to execution down the stretch at the end, and I'll have San Antonio leaving with a 5-6 point win. And then I think they get some rest. I think they might even get Solomon Hill back, and they'll eke out a win against Dallas the next game.
Okay. Pelicans go 2-0. They win both games.
Good gosh.
Yeah.
Is the winning streak ever going to stop?
Never. They're going to win out the rest of the year. No, they're clearly going to lose on March 7th against Sacramento. Like,
yeah.
Isn't that obvious?
That's their kryptonite.
Their nemesis. So, got anything else to talk about?
That is it. We are flying high on a win streak. Hopefully it continues. And we got two more wins to talk about next weekend.
All right. And everybody go check out Black Panther if you haven't. I haven't yet. I'm going to very shortly. Hot take, Luke Cage sucks. I hate that guy. It's terrible.
The actor, not the character.
No, the character's kind of boring too. You really don't have this conversation? Like, he's boring. All he does is punch things. Like, and he doesn't have strategy. He doesn't have tactics. He looks hot, bangs all the chicks, and punches things. I guess some people might like that a lot, but that's, ugh.
That'd be a pretty sweet fucking life, but yeah. Yeah, I would take that life over, say, the Punisher's life. So
that's true.
So,
all right, thanks everybody for listening to In the Know.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.